Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, guys? How you doing? Ben Bateman here for Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, the online broadcast network devoted to movies and all things movie-related. I am joined today by my longtime co-host and genius co-producer, Andrew Guy.
What's up, everybody? Good to be back again. I'm excited to talk about this movie today.
This is a big one for us. So, we do movies on this show. We do action movies on this show. They have to adhere to four basic rules. Those four rules are that the lead character is a political, military, or police figure. There's at least one explosion. The hero is always the smartest guy in the room, as well as the villain. And finally, the movie contains a minimum of at least one explosion. I said that already. The hero always plays by their own rules, is the fourth rule. I'm jumping around.
Have you done this show before?
I'm new, actually. It's my first week. Just getting jumbled. Anyway, this is Mission Impossible 3. This is the third installment in a franchise that has a fifth one coming out this summer.
Yep.
I think just about a month. It's going to be coming out in July. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting. We kind of agree that Tom Cruise is right up there in the pantheon of the all-time great action stars. So this is an exciting one for us.
Yes.
We love Cruise. So, guys, if you want to follow along with us here and you want to tweet at us while we're doing this live, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter. Andrew?
You can find me at Andrew Guy, that's G-H-A-I, on Twitter.
So please be as interactive as possible, because this is something that we love to do. So we are going to start out by airing the trailer for you guys of Mission Impossible 3, and then we will have our initial thoughts, our bold statement, if you will.
Yeah.
I love this trailer.
It's a great trailer. You have a wife.
Girlfriend.
Philip
is so good.
PSH is like, he's legendary.
He has so many iconic roles that I just absolutely love.
You're hard-pressed to really come up with actually somebody who has done more good work in their career.
Yeah. And like, such a vast difference of characters.
You have a wife? Girlfriend.
The recast for him was, like, I was not happy with my choice. Like, I was happy with it.
I'm going to find her.
But, like, it was kind of like, there's no one that could do this on the same level. Weirdly enough, Gandolfini came to mind, which is like so like.
I'm gonna kill you right in front.
They filled like a similar space in terms of what the kind of roles they could do.
Yeah,
they were these like relatable, incredibly talented, kind of ugly characters.
Right, and they could also play like the funny, comforting guy.
Yeah,
they could play like the everyday guy.
Yeah,
and they could play like this just demanding presence.
Very commanding, very like, evil energy built up.
Very evil,
yeah. Speedboat shot.
Yeah, right.
Did we miss it?
Cruise.
There it is. It's just a full on. I love that shot's in the trailer.
It's funny that you say that, because you know last night we were watching this and like that scene happened and you literally were just like, I think that was only in the movie for the trailer.
And by the time I had said that, the shot was over.
Yeah.
So that's literally just
literally a 2 second shot. And I was like, are you sure it's in the trailer? And go back and watch it. There it is.
Both boom. Trailers. Both trailers.
That was true.
Theatrical and the HD DVD trailer.
Love those HD DVD trailers.
So guys, there you go. That was the trailer for Mission Impossible 3. They hadn't started naming them sweet names yet, like Ghost Protocol or Rogue Nation.
Right.
It's something I guess they've just decided to start doing with the later.
That was a great trailer, but I do think it could have been a little better.
Yeah, well, trailers just in general have gotten, like, much better. Like, the last 5 or 6 years now, as we mentioned with the Edge of Tomorrow trailer, which is one of my favorites, there's, like, you know, there's the trailer award ceremonies and everything. These things really go up against each other, so.
I think the first trailer that kind of blew my mind, or not the very first one, but the first one that I was,
Dark Knight?
Changed my life was Dark Knight.
The second one, though.
Well, yeah, but it's even just the first time you heard the Joker's voice,
yeah.
I was just like, whoa.
It's the one with the voiceover. He's like, nothing in his pockets, clothes or custom.
Yeah.
There's nothing in his pockets but knives and lint. And then it goes to his face, and he's like, evening.
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. That was the first trailer that I was just like, I'm obsessed with trailers now.
Yeah, super exciting. So, guys, before we get into our bold statements, I want to let you know that we love to hear from you. We absolutely love to hear from you. It helps us do the show. It helps us do the best job we possibly can. So please go to podcast1.com and take a survey. It might take you 3 minutes. It might take you less. And if you give us your thoughts, you do the best job you possibly can. We will come back at you every single week with the best show we possibly can. So please let us know your thoughts on podcast1.com. That's podcast1.com. Let's get back to the show.
I'm so glad that you were able to voice over Tom Cruise's lib for us.
Of course, yeah, he's the best.
Great.
Andrew, I'm going to start with you. I want to know your bold statement about this movie.
Okay, I'm actually happy to go first because I feel very strongly about this. I think that this is the best Mission Impossible movie because of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I had like similar thoughts. Can you elaborate just quickly?
Okay, so I was thinking about this as I was coming up with my bold statement. And you think about, for me, the greatest villains of all time in movies, or some of them that just come into mind. I got Gary Oldman in Leon the Professional. You got Ed Harris, General Hummel. And Philip Seymour Hoffman in this, and you got Heath Ledger in Dark Knight.
Yep.
You know, those are four that just popped into my head right away.
Sure.
I was thinking of just like iconic villains, like phenomenal. The worst of the worst.
Gary Oldman in Air Force One, too.
Yeah, he's great in that. He makes that.
Yeah,
So I went back and I looked, and none of those guys have won Academy Awards other than Heath Ledger, who won it for his role as a villain.
Posthumously.
Yeah. And then, nominations have gone a lot to Ed Harris and Gary Oldman. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is the only one that won an Academy Award the year prior to being a bad guy in an action movie.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is at the top of his game. He does The Savages after this, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Capote the year beforehand. Like, he's insane. And even just in the trailer, like, he's so cold.
Yeah.
He's so calculated. He's just heartless. And there's so many times in this movie when I'm watching it, I'm just like, this is only this good because of how intense and badass Philip Seymour Hoffman is.
He's a great villain.
Who is definitely not physically striking or intimidating in any way whatsoever.
No, but he has that evil energy.
It's amazing. He's just evil. Like, through and through.
Yeah. My bold statement is, and we'll get into this a little more when we talk about sort of the eras of Cruise's career, but my bold statement is that this movie is so good that really, had it not been for the media fiasco that happened, the 2 years of hell essentially in Cruise's career that was spawned by his Scientology video that he put out, as well as the Oprah stuff and Katie Holmes, all the controversy that went along with basically the time this movie came out, this movie could have gone one of two ways. And I think because of his public antics, so my statement would be, because of Cruise's public antics, this movie went from being a huge pointing up arrow to the next era of his career to a giant arrow down.
Which, I totally agree with you. I do believe that's true. But the funny thing is that this movie is kind of the reboot of the franchise in a sense. Like, I know it hasn't been a huge gap between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But the feel and the tone of the movies are so different.
Totally.
And this is right after War of the Worlds. And it's true. This movie was a box office bomb. And we'll talk about that when we get into the numbers. But it's literally only because of, like you said, you got the Oprah thing, the Katie Holmes thing, the Scientology thing, and then the South Park thing with the Trapped in the Closet episode.
Right.
This movie should have been massive.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what I sort of mean is, based on the quality of the film, I think this movie could have been the rocket into Cruise Era 4. But instead, this was the Challenger. That's essentially what this movie turned out to be.
Yeah, because after this, he goes and he has a little bit of a struggle in the next decade,
I mean,
almost.
The only reason that we're even talking about
decade, in like 5 years.
The only reason we're even talking about it, like, he's not still struggling, is because A, people forgot and they liked Mission Impossible 4 and it made a ton of money, and B, Edge of Tomorrow was a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Take away Edge and you're really looking and you're saying he's made one profitable movie since 2006.
Right, we're talking about a guy that literally every single movie had made over $100 million immediately.
He owned every single decade.
Yeah.
80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Absolutely.
He was the number one act. He was the number one movie star. He's pretty much the number one movie star of all time. There's only a few people who you can really put on his level, in like Harrison Ford, a couple guys that are really up there. But like, really, in terms of moneymaker, just sheer volume, it's pretty...
And the difference of movies that they do. You know, it's not like they're only action stars. That's the only thing they can do. They can play very many, like, versatile roles.
Agreed. So this will lead us really nicely into where he was at in his career when this movie came out. But before we do that, I want to just get right into Fist Pump Moment. You know, Fist Pump Moment is the thing that we do on this show, guys. It's one of our favorites. It's a little different than favorite scene. It's Fist Pump Moment is that moment when you're watching the movie and something happens. You just have that kind of, like, F yeah to yourself where you're just like, yes, this is sweet. I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in this movie. This movie's pretty awesome. For me, I'm going to go with the opening scene.
Yep.
And the reason I'm going to do it, we were watching this movie, and I was like, because the opening scene, the movie starts out, and it's a shot from the trailer where Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's like, who are you? You have a wife, a girlfriend, you know, his whole thing that he gets. Then he starts counting 10. And it's so fantastic because Cruz, he's chained to this chair, and they've got a gun to Michelle Monaghan's head.
Mm-hmm.
And he's counting to 10. But he's so evil.
Did you know that originally Billy Crudup was the guy counting to 10?
Yeah, yeah.
And then J.J. Abrams was like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It needs to be Philip C. doing this.
And they switched him over,
It's so much more. It's so much better that way.
And it's actually a great moment because you see how it's like PSH has this like almost lazy delivery to his lines.
Right.
It's so good. It's like he's this sloppy, lazy, evil guy.
Right. It's like he cares so little about you. He's hardly going to enunciate what he's saying, but he means what he's saying.
It's great. And then, and Cruz, it's one of the rare occasions in one of these action pieces where he really gets a great acting scene.
Yes.
This is a fantastic scene for
all three of them.
Yeah.
Monaghan, Cruz, and Hoffman.
Oh, so good.
It's the eyes, tears, like, it's so good.
Because as he's going through the lines, each count, like, one, two, Cruz changes his approach to getting him to, like, five times.
Yeah.
He's like, where's the rabbit foot? And he's like, I already gave, was what I gave you not enough? And then he's like, I have the rabbit's foot. It's in Paris. It's not in Paris. Three. And he's like, let her go!
Yeah.
Let her go! And then I love when he gets the nine. He's like, no.
No,
he's just saying no. The tears are... You were looking over at me, and I was just like, my jaw was just dropped.
Yeah, you were just completely, encapsulated by it.
That's, to me, why I was like, this is the fist bump moment for me, because I'm so in on this movie right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the thing that I love about that is that I hate when bad guys don't follow through with their threats.
Spoilers, if you haven't seen this movie again, please go watch it.
It just came out 9 years ago.
Yeah, go watch it right now and come back and watch, because we are going to definitely reveal what happens in the movie. Keep going.
I love... that, what is it, on count six, he shoots her in the leg.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, damn, he's not juggling.
And Cruz is like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, freaks out, yeah. And then, as you see later on, because this is a flash forward to about three quarters way through the movie, he shoots her on 10. When does that happen? When a bad guy counts to 10 and shoots her?
Gary Oldman.
I can think of Gary Oldman in Air Force One and this. And maybe it's happened before, let us know, but that is what I loved about this scene.
Gary Oldman, Air Force One. That's a really good one. Dark Knight. Gordon gets shot, I guess. Actually, no. It's Maggie Gyllenhaal getting blown up.
Yeah.
That's
when you don't think it's going to... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so my fist pump moment is... I have two. I have two of everything. I can never make up my mind. It's a problem.
Right.
So the first one I'm going to do is the adrenaline shot to Kerry Russell's chest.
Sweet.
I just love when people get shot up with adrenaline.
Yes.
It's just awesome. Like it ended Million Dollar Baby, thank God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Pulp Fiction,
Uma, yeah.
Yeah,
it's great. But I just love it. He's like, you're going to feel this.
Yeah.
He's like, just goes straight into her chest.
Yeah,
just massive. And then she's just, her eyes are crazy.
Yeah, now this is a, we'll get into that. So that's,
That's the first one. And Carrie Russell trained 3 months just for that short little scene right there, just to get in shape for
It's a pretty significant scene.
She has, it's intense.
Yeah.
It's great. Mm-hmm. And then my second one is, it's just classic Mission Impossible. They get in the Lambo, drive away, they escape through the bottom. This is after they did the whole face and voice thing, which everyone loves to see that.
Yep.
They escape, Tom Cruise says a pun, they blow the Lambo, cue Mission Impossible music, speedboat.
Yeah.
And that's like an hour in, you're like, oh, yes!
And we're watching it, and I look, and we were talking about this over the trailer, you see the speedboat shot, I look over, I go, I think this is only in this movie for the trailer.
Literally.
Because where are they going in the speedboat? I guess they're going home or something.
They're like, escaping, I believe.
The like next scene, they're like back at IMF or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's like, no segue. Nothing.
Yeah. And like I was like, I think this is only in the movie for the trailer. You're like, really? And then we just cuts. This shot's done. We get up both trailers, the HD DVD trailer as well as the theatrical. It's in both just for that one shot.
That's it.
Cruz was probably like, guys, we need a speedboat shot.
I'm going to be in a speedboat.
I have this idea.
Yeah, so those are my fist pump moments for sure.
Sweet. All right, so let's get into star profiles. We talked about Cruz. We'll talk about his three most recent. So War of the Worlds 2005, Collateral 04, mm-hmm. Last Samurai 03. Now, that's a massive three-year stretch.
Huge.
Yeah, like, we a lot of the time when we do these movies, we look at the things that the star or the villain were involved in. They're not quite on the level of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, War of the Worlds was his most profitable movie he ever made.
By far.
Massive. Steven yes. Spielberg. Collateral, Oscar-nominated Michael Mann, heralded as one of Cruise's best roles. I'm actually in my Collateral outfit right now.
I can see this that.
This is one more button and the sunglasses. It would be, I got to spray my hair gray now. I have a Tom Cruise birthday party coming up on Saturday. It's,
he's very excited about
it. It's a Tom Cruise costume party. I'm real excited about it. I'm probably going to be Collateral Cruise. We'll see. But anyway.
Just in case anyone out there wanted to know.
Collateral's great. He's fantastic.
That is one of my favorite Cruise roles, period.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's just he's so Cruise in it. And it's just a good movie.
It's one of his five best. Yeah. Easy. Easy. What's his character name in it? Vincent.
Vincent?
Yeah. No. Vincent is...
That's Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Right?
I can't remember. Who cares?
Yeah, anyway. And then The Last Samurai in 03. Now, the funny thing about Last Samurai...
Is he's a white guy that's a samurai?
Well, that is the funny thing. The funny thing about Last Samurai is that when the Edswick movie came out, it's this huge treatment of this, like, kind of absurd concept, which is that, like, Tom Cruise is the Last Samurai.
Right.
But when you go back and watch the movie again...
I love that movie.
It's awesome.
It's so awesome.
It's so good.
They have that great training of him becoming a samurai.
Oh, yeah.
It's I love that movie, and I still will tell people I love that movie, and they laugh at me, and I'm just like, go watch it.
Right.
It's a good movie.
It's excellent. It's very well done. Like, everything about the movie is great. So this is a pretty ridiculous three-year stretch. That's why we talk about...
I mean, before this, it's basically a ridiculous 30-year stretch.
Yeah. No doubt. So let's talk about the eras of his career. Really
do you quickly. Have? Do we have a screen cap of his movie list or no?
Of the all-timer? No. We have... I mean, there's just too many.
The money. Yeah, that's true. All right.
But if you look at, like, okay, so Taps, Endless Love, that's mm-hmm. like the very beginning, 81, 82. Now, he becomes a massive star in 85 with Risky Business.
Yep.
And in 86, it's Top Gun. I think it's pretty safe to say he owned the 80s. He was in movies alongside Oscar winners in Rain Man in 88, Color of Money in 86. He got his first Oscar nomination, I think, in 89 or 90 for Born on the 4th of July. That feels like that's the end of phase
one. Yeah, that's definitely the beginning of the next career, or phase of his career, excuse me.
Yeah, so Paula Wagner, and we'll get to her in a little bit, she was his agent at Creative Artists, and they launched Wagner Cruise in 93. Mm-hmm. That was their production company.
Yes.
With the notion that they would retain more profits if they were producing their own stuff. And he was such a star by 93 after doing Days of Thunder and Far and Away.
Right, I mean, this is a perfect time for you to become a producer on your own movies.
Yeah, Few Good Men. So... I think it's probably safe to say somewhere right in there is the next phase,
mm-hmm.
right? You could say that it's like 94, you have like The Firm, 94, you have Sympathy for the Interview with the Vampire, 95, you have Mission Impossible 1. You know, I think him...
And right around then is Jerry Maguire as well, right?
96, yeah. Yeah, so I think the next phase of his career you would have to say is like right when they launched that, it's like post A Few Good Men.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's probably a 93 movie I'm forgetting. It's essentially the second half of the 90s. I think probably up through maybe if Last Samurai's, I think
yeah,
like,
so we got The Firm, Interview with the Vampire in 94, Mission Impossible in 96, Jerry Maguire in 96. I think it ends there.
Oh, you think
I think that's the next, yeah, because then he goes into Eyes Wide Shut, Magnolia and Vanilla Sky.
This is like Oscar gunning Cruise. He's trying to win an Oscar now.
And he's amazing in Magnolia.
He's
just incredible.
One of his best roles.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so you keep going, this is the beginning of the third phase, and you go Mission Impossible 2, Vanilla Sky, Minority Report, Last Samurai, Collateral, War of the Worlds, and that right there, War of the Worlds and Mission Impossible 3 is kind of the beginning
of phase
the
4.
End of the 3, beginning of 4.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like the four eras of his career. Mm-hmm. It's weird. You could almost look at them as decades, but they're not quite.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is... It'll be interesting to see, and we talked about this on the Edge of Tomorrow episode, what happens with Doug Liman's got Mena coming out in 2 years.
This could be phase five, older Cruise gunning for another Oscar, because you see it now. You see that he's a little older, finally. Like, this dude has been timeless.
Ageless.
For like 20-something years.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
And you finally see in that new trailer that you're like, oh my God, you're getting a little older, man.
Yeah.
And I think that older Tom Cruise playing serious roles like he did back with Magnolia, Vanilla Sky, Eyes Wide Shut, the dude should win an Oscar.
He will. He will.
He should, right?
He's too talented not to. And he's worked too hard
for
too long.
A lot of guys that haven't won Oscars.
Yeah,
Gary Oldman hasn't won an Oscar.
True, yeah. Cruise would have to get, like, the Birdman role. Like, he'd have to get, like, that kind of... It's hard for guys like him to win in this day and age at this point in his career. But, yeah, it is interesting to see that this movie that we're doing is really the kickoff point to Phase 4.
Yeah. Because after that, it's just bad. Like, Lions for Lambs got... slaughtered.
It's not a good movie.
Box office.
I took a girl to that movie on a date in 2008.
Never heard from her again.
It was a first date. We were very quiet. We were the only ones in the theater. I think there was like four other people. Yeah. It was in a mall. And afterwards, we just went home.
You took her to Sbarro, didn't you?
There was very little romance. That movie is about politics and like war politics.
Right.
And Cruise plays like a politician, I think. It's just the whole...
I never saw it, and I'm happy to admit, I've seen most all of Tom Cruise movies. I never saw that movie, and I don't ever plan on it.
Robert Redford, Meryl Streep, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, you're like, this should be amazing.
Yeah, it was just weird and bad. Also, 2008 Valkyrie,
yeah.
which actually, I really like Valkyrie.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, it's another one of these ones, though. His public image was so tarnished at that point.
Yeah.
I mean,
he spent all this time just trying to... Which is why it comes back to this, is Mission Impossible 3. This movie should have been massive.
There was no movie in 07, right? He had no movie come out?
Yes, he did have... That was Lions for Lambs, was 2007.
Oh, that was 07.
Yeah.
So that was the one... Because he was doing like one a year for a while,
yeah,
there, right?
Yeah, Tropic 4, 5. Thunder, then Valkyrie, then, you know.
So Valkyrie has... Valkyrie is an interesting one because it's got that great shot from the trailer where... And this is... I remember watching it where I was like, this is when I was discovering how much I love Tom Cruise during this phase because I was realizing how cruisy he is and why that's such a unique thing.
Right.
Like, the way that he delivers his lines, right? So there's, like, a line in the trailer for Valkyrie where he's talking to some other, like, general or something in South Africa, I think. And he looks at him and he's like, you can serve Germany or you can serve the Fuhrer, but you can't do both. Or something like that. I just remember it's like, what are you doing in the war, Tom Cruise? Like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Those occasional moments where you're just like, you're just Tom Cruise in war regalia.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Just like him at the beginning of Edge of Tomorrow. You're like, you're not a soldier. You're not, like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know?
It's just awesome. Anyway, so that's
Tommy.
That's Cruise. Now we get into PSH. Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of the great
God
tragedies.
Rest his soul. Is seriously, yeah. What a great tragedy of our
Hard
of our era.
To find an actor in our era who has done better work. He's pretty much the best that's ever been.
Like, yeah, I mean, I love Robin Williams. I love Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
But I respect Philip Seymour Hoffman for his acting chops alone.
Yeah.
More than almost anyone.
Yeah.
Like, Ledger had his looks going for him in the beginning, and then he proved that he's like, I can act. I'm a damn good actor. You got Williams, who's got the comedy thing. He's one of the greatest improvisational stand-up comedians I've ever seen in my entire life. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is this guy. He's not that attractive, but he's just a killer actor. He's insane.
Yeah, unreal. Like, some of... I can think of 10 Philip Seymour Hoffman movies that I don't just like, that I
love.
Absolutely love.
And movies that you love him in that he's not even a big part of, like Boogie Nights. He's incredible in that.
One of the best parts of the movie, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. So his four movies, we listed four here. I'll let you take this one.
Listed four. Okay, so we got Capote, 2005. He won the Oscar for that,
sure.
Which is what I was saying in the beginning, is how often does someone go from winning an Oscar for a great dramatic biographic,
right,
to doing an action movie where he's the bad guy. So that's huge. That's massive. And then after that you got Along Came Polly, Punch Drunk Love, and Red Dragon. And the reason that I picked these movies is because I feel it really shows what a chameleon he is.
It's a chameleon, actually.
I'm going to say chameleon, and I think my audience will agree that I know what I'm talking about.
Are you saying the chameleon? Like, he's a shapeshifter?
Yes, he's a shapeshifter. He's chameleon.
Like
Red Dragon. So in Red Dragon, you have him. He's this, like, he's this douchey, dismissive, like, slimy reporter. He sneaks in and takes pictures at Ed Norton in the hospital. Like, he's just kind of a schmuck. He does exactly what you're talking about, where he kind of, like, he, like, doesn't really finish his lines or enunciate.
Yeah.
He just kind of talks sloppy.
Right.
He's just kind of a dick. You kind of hate him.
Yeah.
But then he gets captured, and you see this, like, incredibly vulnerable, scared, like, wuss.
Yeah.
So you got that in there. And then you go to Punch Drunk Love. He's just a dick in that movie.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Totally.
He's just complete asshole, but he's, like, much more stern.
Yeah.
And then next you got Along Came Polly.
Hilarious.
Hilarious.
White Chocolate.
White Chocolate. Raindrops.
Yeah, yeah.
Backboard. Yeah.
So good.
He's amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
And everyone knows that's where Sharded came from.
Yeah.
That wasn't a word before then, which blows my mind.
Is it from Along Came Polly?
It's from Along Came Polly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's at the mixer in the beginning in the art gallery, and he goes up to Bessie. He's like, I just sharted.
I remember the line. I just didn't know that
was
a word.
I don't think I'd ever heard it before that.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, Capote. So, like, this dude can do anything. And then after this, he follows it up with The Savages and Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. And
Synecdoche,
yeah, New York and Doubt.
Yeah.
Like, this dude can do absolutely anything, and
he's
this is like the peak of his career, you know, like it keeps going.
Yeah,
he doesn't really slow down much, but he starts to do a little bit more indie stuff.
Yeah, he really, I mean, it's hard, like we said, when he died, I remember reading several articles about it and people talking about some of his greatest moments and just sort of like there was a good 2 or 3 years there where you were sort of like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is the best actor in the world.
Yeah. Like, even like, I love Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah. I think that Daniel Day-Lewis is like the greatest method actor of all time.
Right.
But he doesn't do the volume of work.
No.
That Philip Seymour Hoffman does, and he brings it every time. Every single time he's at the top of his game.
Yeah, pretty unbelievable. So yeah, that's kind of the place they were in their careers. It's a really special thing that you get to have somebody as talented as him playing the villain in an action movie. Just the whole concept of Oscar nominees playing villains in action movies, as we mentioned, you know, Oldman in Air Force One and Ledger in Dark Knight. You have PSH here.
Ed Harris
and The Rock.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you don't get a lot of them. It's not that common, especially nowadays in these big budget action movies. You don't just jam Philip Seymour Hoffman into a movie.
Right. It almost feels like this came at that time when it was still acceptable.
It's like the end of it too. The 90s was like the big era for it.
Because you look at Mission Impossible 4, that guy's like whatever to me. Like he sucks.
Yeah.
Like he looks like he'd try to sell you a Mercedes.
Yeah, yeah.
But and he's evil. But he's not like almost every single time Philip Seymour Hoffman is on screen, you're just like, oh man.
Yeah.
Here we go.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So production development on this movie I want to get into. We will talk about that in just a second, but really quickly first, guys, I want to tell you that you should look into iTunes. You can find this as an audio podcast on iTunes. If you look on iTunes, you will find that Popcorn Talk hosts many, many shows, and ours, Action Movie Anatomy, is available to you as a download. Please rate us, find us on iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Find us on YouTube. It is in your best interest to find us on YouTube, and if you don't, you're going to die.
You can't keep telling our audience they're going to die, sorry, man. They're going to stop watching.
Ed, you're not really going to die. It's just that's what Tom Cruise would say. His aggressive sincerity.
You will die.
Yeah. So, so please rate us on iTunes, YouTube, all of the accessories to help us do the show.
Yeah.
And let's get into production development.
How was this movie made, Bateman?
This movie was shot all over the place. All of the locations mentioned, none of them were cheated. So they shoot the scenes at the Vatican in Rome. They shoot it in Rome. They had such an enormous amount of spectators around in Rome that they had to have a second unit, like a proxy second unit.
Completely fake.
Like a half mile down the way, just with like women in bikinis and cameras set up.
And nuns. What's that all about?
Just to look like there was something happening to draw attention away from the actual shoots. They could go about their business.
And it worked.
Yeah, so they shot there. They shot in Shanghai, China for the scenes at the end where Cruz is just the most dominant runner in the business. You know that Cruz's Twitter page? It says, running in movies since 1981. It says, actor, producer, running in movies since 1981. Like, he's in on the
joke. He owns it. He knows.
Yeah.
He knows he's the greatest runner of all time.
He's a fantastic runner.
He looks like he's going so fast.
Oh, yeah. He just gets, yeah, it's amazing. So,
you know, with those short legs, he's probably going like 7 miles an hour.
He just takes off. Yeah. So, yeah, they shot in Shanghai. They did a bunch of scenes in Los Angeles, both at the Paramount lot, as well as they built like a whole, they outfitted like this entire warehouse building into that building where they shoot the scenes with Kerry Russell.
Right.
At the beginning. And then the bridge scene, which is supposed to be...
Love that scene.
Yeah, the bridge scene, which is the, we'll get into ultimate action scenes later. So maybe we'll get into that in a bit. Yeah, the film was pretty massive, $150 million budget, and was the first time, actually, that a budget that large was given to a first-time director.
Right, Mr. J.J. Abrams.
Because this was Abrams' first movie.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising to me.
Yeah.
I know that he was a master producer on Alias and Lost, but for some reason I thought that he had directed more than, I believe, 2 episodes each of those shows.
Yeah.
I thought he'd done a lot more, personally. I don't know why. I didn't really watch him.
Lost and Alias.
Yeah, I didn't watch him.
Well, he was a creator of Alias. That's his show.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like...
But I just figured that he directed
as a director.
As a director. Yeah. Not producer, not creator, writer, just director.
Sure, sure.
And it was surprising to me to see that.
Yeah, agreed. So this movie, you know, Frank Darabont, I think you had mentioned, was originally involved.
Yeah, he had his fingers in the very, very beginning of writing the screenplay. And you guys know him from The Walking Dead, Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile. I'm not sure how much of it actually came through, but I just thought it was interesting to see that, like, you got Frank Darabont in here. You got J.J. Abrams. You got Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Like, you have all these massive people that all had their fingers in this movie.
Yeah, Cruz, off record, obviously not a direct quote, but he in an interview had mentioned that he was just at home one night and they were working on production development of this movie and plotting it because the second one had made so much money it was inevitable they were gonna make the third one.
Yeah.
And Cruz was really, as we said, sort of peaking. So he just was watching an episode of Alias one night at home and he just was like,
right.
Yeah. And he was like, this guy is great. He's like, the pacing here is so good. I want JJ to direct Mission Impossible 3. Like, no care in the world that he had never directed a movie like this.
$150 million? Here you go, man. Good luck.
Good luck. Like, I trust you completely to do this.
And as you can see from 2 to 3, his direction makes this movie so much more believable.
Yeah.
It makes it so much more real. Like, I think the first thing that pops in my head is that Tom Cruise is at that party where his wife, or I guess at the time girlfriend, Michelle Monaghan, has no idea what he does.
Yeah.
And he gets that phone call. It's like, blah, 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 you know, you're needed.
Right.
It's his mission calling. And he meets Billy Crudup in like a 7-Eleven, and then he gives him the thing. And
the disposable camera.
And he watches it on there. Do you remember how he got his mission in Mission Impossible 2?
Oh, please tell us.
I would love to. So he's free-form rock climbing out in the middle of God knows where.
Yeah.
Just doing these insane jumps and like pulling himself up. He's going to die.
He slips and starts sliding.
Yeah, yeah. But he's fine.
Yeah.
He's cool.
He catches himself?
Yep. One hand. Yeah. He gets to the top.
He's like, whew, that was close.
Yeah. So he gets to the top, and then a helicopter comes out of nowhere. And it shoots like a rocket-propelled like bank tube, you know those?
Yeah,
whoop,
right.
One of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Shoots it right into the rock, and then up out of the top comes sunglasses.
Yeah,
that he then puts on to get his mission.
They're Oakleys, right?
Yeah, it's product placement. It's like Anthony Hopkins' voice, and
yeah,
he's like talking about how I can't even take a vacation with you guys or whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean? This is so much more believable just down to him getting his mission.
Of course.
You're like watching this movie, you're like, this is so much smarter than the second one, thank God.
Yeah. Well, John Woo did the second movie. And John Woo, he had gained a lot of popularity in the 90s for doing Face Off. And obviously his two films, he has two gigantic films. Hard Boiled, I think, is him. Or maybe I'm mixing up John Woo movies. But John Woo, who was very, very famous,
right,
obviously overseas, and they brought him in to do this because he was so popular.
He's just so gimmicky.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Face-Off with, like, the white doves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the gold guns and everything. So, Mission Impossible, I mean, like, as you said, this movie kind of rebranded all that. And I think they were very aware of it.
Yeah, totally. They in this movie, there's only two instances where they use the transforming face.
Yeah.
Which, the first time they do it, the makeup and the editing of that is awesome.
In this movie.
Yeah, so he puts on the mask, and it's just, like, so loose, and you can just see it's Tom Cruise with his mask on. And then the camera kind of comes around, and then, like, pushing the face together.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, it kind of looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman. You can still see the eyes are Cruise.
Yeah.
And then he goes up, and the camera's coming back around, and he, like, pushes on the eyes. And it's, like, and then it's seamlessly Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise's voice.
It's really good, yeah. I agree.
That moment, I thought, was almost another fist pump moment for me, just because, like, this is how it should be done every time.
Yeah.
I don't want to just see him with the mask on and then pulling it off later.
And it's cool, too, when you see, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman running around. It's supposed to be Cruise as Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
But PSH is running around and, like, jumping through vents. And that's actually Philip Seymour Hoffman having to, like, do Cruise mannerisms.
And he's moving like Cruise does. And he's crawling like he does. And, yeah, it's... That's another thing is Philip Seymour Hoffman is so good.
Yeah.
He can even just make you, he can make you believe that Tom Cruise is in his body.
One of the interviews for prep for this that I watched with PSH, again, indirect quote, but he's essentially saying that, like, it's very, very wild for him to be in a movie like this and to watch the dailies of him doing like a fist fight,
right,
like a physical fight with Tom Cruise. Cause he's like, I'm so not used to doing that sort of thing.
Yeah,
he's like, it's crazy to watch it. He's like, I can't even. So I thought that was pretty cool. The idea of, like, you know, sometimes you think about what it would be like for a male and a female co-star to work together, maybe, and they have to have a relationship and sleep together in the movie or something. You're like, I wonder what that would be like for them to have to do that. But then it's like just the same thing. It's like having
a
fist fight
like
with Tom
Seymour
Cruise.
Hoffman having a fist fight with Tom Cruise. It's like, he's like you say, he's watching. He's like, what the hell am I doing?
Right.
Is this me?
Yeah, it's super.
And he's great. Anyway, I'm sorry. I got sidetracked there. I just got so excited talking about that.
No worries. So so to promote the film, Paramount rigged like 4,500 randomly selected Los Angeles Times vending boxes with digital audio players that, when it opened, would play the theme song.
Yeah.
And some of them malfunctioned and like fell out when they would try to take the papers out. And then some people thought they were like bomb threats.
Oh yeah, they shut down a hospital.
Yeah. There was like a whole, but they were just like, this is cool enough, we're just gonna leave them in.
Yeah, they didn't care.
Yeah.
They saw this is going on, like, yeah, whatever. People will deal with it.
I thought that was like a pretty cool little bit. Yeah, exactly. You'd like open it and you're like, what's happening? And they're just like, bomb! Bomb!
Right.
Get out!
It'd be so sweet to have a Mission Impossible theme play when you, like, open your fridge.
Oh, yeah.
You know, flush the toilet, anything.
The Tom Cruise fridge. You are out of eggs.
Yeah.
You need to go get groceries or you're going to die.
Protein in your body. You're going to die.
Yeah. It is funny, like, one of the things, and I was noticing this later in the movie when he's talking to Michelle Monaghan, and he's like, I have to leave. I have to go out of town again.
Yeah.
And she's like, what's going on? Like,
something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Yeah.
And she looks at him and she goes, what are you not telling me? And I remembered the line from Edge of Tomorrow, it's the same line that Emily Blunt says. She's like, what are you not telling me? Yeah. Like, I wonder how many lines he says or his co-stars say the same lines for dramatic effect.
Yeah, because then he goes, trust me.
I need you to trust me.
I need you to trust me.
I need you to trust me.
Which I swear to God, he says that in every movie. That's like Harrison Ford, where's my family?
Yeah, right,
exactly. Tom Cruise says this in every movie.
It's great. It's fantastic. So
he produced this movie.
Yeah, Cruise. So we can actually just get into the next bit of this.
Okay.
We'll start with producers. So he and Paula Wagner are the major producers on this movie. There's about six others. Some of them are like supervising producers. Some are overseas. I didn't list any of them. Some of them have notable filmographies. They've got some real credits. But there's no like. There's no like Bruce Berman on this movie.
No, it's these two guys.
Yeah. So Paula Wagner and Cruise. What happened here was in 2005 when War of the Worlds came out, that movie made a ton of money because all of the fiasco stuff we had talked about with going on Oprah and jumping on Oprah's couch, proclaiming his love for Katie Holmes was one thing. The Scientology video that came out of him doing the speech about if he sees somebody, he thinks he's the only person that can save them. There was the thing that happened with Matt Lauer, where he's your glib bat, and he's basically having an argument about antidepressants, postpartum depression, and Brooke Shields and the way she handled her postpartum depression.
Right, right.
And he's essentially saying that you don't need to, you know, do any of that stuff.
He's also got that thing with, like I said, South Park, where he like didn't want him to air the episode because Trapped in the Closet was too offensive for him, and blah, blah, blah. And then they went back and they had to edit out because it became like a battle between these two two production companies essentially, and they ended up having to edit out in the final episode of South Park or the final cut of it, like, don't go see Mission Impossible 3 coming out in May 6th. You know, like that was in the episode just because they were just wanted to be like an F you straight to Tom Cruise.
So yeah, basically. You have to, if you're a big fan of movies or sports, it's kind of the same thing. Public personalities and their careers, you have to kind of learn to separate them. Yep. I mean, I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan. I think he's like the greatest. Like, I love him as an actor.
Yep.
I've never met Tom Cruise. He's one of the 10 interviews I would hope to get in my life someday. Everything I've heard is that he's the coolest guy on earth. His personal politics about Scientology, that's not something that interests me. I don't care.
Like, no, I don't care. He's an actor.
Yeah.
I care about what he does as an actor.
Exactly. That's what I will talk to him about, is that stuff. So, with that stuff, it really sunk his career and the success of this movie. And in turn, what happened was their distribution deal was not renewed, and this movie didn't make any money. This movie was a huge, basically, tank.
It was the worst.
Yeah,
like it didn't even break even in the U.S. for a Tom Cruise movie, for a Mission Impossible movie. The Mission Impossible 4 made almost $700 million worldwide.
Yeah,
this movie. I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll get into the budget.
So Paula Wagner, who I mentioned before, was his agent at CAA and started Wagner Cruise with him. They then revived United Artists, which was an old defunct studio that originally had been put out of business because of Heaven's Gate, the huge Michael Cimino disaster movie that was his follow up to Deer Hunter. That's a whole story for another time. But they revived United Artists, and they decided to make it their own studio. By 2008, when Lions for Lambs tanked, Valkyrie didn't make much money, this movie, which was not part of their studio, didn't make any money, Paula Wagner stepped down.
Yeah.
She's worked with Cruise on Jack Reacher since then, but it hasn't been the same company. So the production on this movie was sort of like, unsuccessful, I guess. It's a little unfair that Wagner was looped in as a failure and Cruise was a success, based on the fact that, like, his career and, like, nobody really wanted to touch Cruise, the 10-foot pole at this point in his career. So that's kind of the producers behind this and how that all worked.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer because she just kind of had to take the bullet for what was going on.
They had done so much good work together. You know? Like, every movie he did between, like, 80-something and 06
was her. She was in most of them, yeah.
Yeah, they produced all of them together. Well, between 93 and 06, they produced them together. But she was his agent before that, so... Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was written by Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci. So they were guys that originally worked together on Hercules, the legendary journey, legendary journeys. And they met Abrams on Alias, which was his show with Jennifer Garner that he created. They wrote some episodes for Alias. They ended up being, for a few years there, pretty much the premier writers of tentpole films in Hollywood. So they wrote Transformers 1 together. They wrote Mission Impossible 3. They wrote Star Trek. 2008, they wrote Amazing Spider-Man 2. Very, very successful guys. So they had their own company they started called KO Paper Products. Produced a bunch of stuff, including what did they produce? Including Star Trek Into Darkness, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Ender's Game. Very successful stuff. In 2014, they decided to split as a writing team, and they're working on their own projects. The amicable split, not no bad blood, but
right. I mean, you can only do so much with with two people.
Yeah.
Like, with one other person, you know, like writing films.
Yeah, they're going
especially if you're this successful, yeah, try it out on your own.
Yeah, they're going in a direction. It sounds like Orci has been rumored to direct the third Star Trek installment, and Kurtzman has been attached to the Spider-Man spinoff of Venom. So they're both pretty successful dudes in their own right.
Clearly.
Yeah. KO Paper Products will continue on as a television production company, but the film side of it is dissolved now.
Well, they had a good run, man.
They did, absolutely. So this movie was one of the big hits for them early, because this is 06. I think Transformers is 07. Mm-hmm. The rest of those movies were after. So this was a big, like, knock it out of the park in terms of quality, which is funny because the movie didn't make any money.
Right. Like, this movie didn't make any money, and... I mean, let's just get into the money then, because I just want to talk about it.
Well, let's talk about Abrams quick.
All right, all right. The whole money thing just blows my mind. Like, the critical reception and the money thing is just getting to me. So,
yeah.
Excuse me.
So, well, yeah, no worries. We'll get into Abrams first. So, Abrams was a guy who most of you probably know the name J.J. Abrams at this point.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's massive. He's legendary. He's really well known for handling, like, sci-fi, adventure, mm-hmm. and superhero properties with a really elegant touch.
I mean, the dude's only directed 4 movies before he gets the nod to do the new Star Wars movies.
I mean, and this was... He had never directed a movie before
right.
this.
Right. He goes Mission Impossible 3. He got Super 8. He got the 2 Star Treks.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, hey, here's the Star Wars franchise.
Well, Star Trek was such a great reboot.
Oh, it was amazing. That was another one that was like, are you really going to give this... You're going to give Star Trek... But no one thought that at the time.
Yeah, everybody was like, a Star Trek reboot?
Yeah.
They're like, eh? And then it was like so good.
But I think the fact that J.J. Abrams was doing it was never like a moment of like, what are you guys doing? Because had that with Star Wars a little bit.
Well, he executive produced Lost, which mm-hmm. is one of the all-time most popular shows, beloved by a lot of people.
Yep.
He created Felicity in 98, ran for 4 seasons.
It's Ben's favorite show.
Which, by the way, he also composed the theme song for.
Really?
He's a composer, writer, producer, and director. He composed the theme song. How's this guy such a genius?
I don't know. Some people just have it all.
All, yeah. Alias, he created, produced every episode of the show. As we said, Lost. And he was even writing films and producing films in the 90s regarding Henry.
Yeah.
Gone Fishing with Danny Glover and
love it.
Joe Pesci,
yeah.
That's him. He was, you know, pretty notable. Oh, Armageddon, he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty wild. Or did he write it or did he produce it? One or the other. Don't put me on record on that. But I know he was involved in Armageddon.
What do you think about him doing the Star Wars movies?
Total faith, yeah. I mean, I've seen the trailers. Also, one of my good friends is the editor who's been working on the Star Wars trailer. So he's seen all the footage. And he's got great things to say about
it. Really? All right. That's exciting for me. That's exciting for everyone, I'm sure.
Yeah,
because the last 3 Star Wars movies that came out were not good.
No.
They were not enjoyable.
No. And the trailers have been sweet. They've been really good.
The trailer was sweet. Do you know how many people cried?
In the trailer?
Yeah.
No.
Just because of Harrison Ford and just feel like the movie coming back. You know
what
I mean?
We're home, Chewie. Yeah. Where's my family?
Yeah.
So anyway, Abrams is a freaking genius. The guy at this point could turn poop into gold.
He can do anything. Like, I have faith in him to do anything.
No. Yeah. At this point, I would trust him completely. It's interesting that he hasn't been involved in the Mission Impossible franchise since the 3rd one.
I would think, yeah, that's surprising to me.
But there's a new team of really capable
people. Well, on the 4th one, he did produce a little bit, I believe. He's, like, listed as one of the producers.
Oh, he produced
but he's like, lower down.
Lower down.
As is Tom Cruise.
Not involved, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the 5th one, yeah, it's, like, McQuarrie and yeah, so... Anyway, yeah, we can get into box office now.
Good. Good.
I'll let you get into it.
All right, so this was produced by Paramount. It was the last film that they distributed for the Wagner and Cruise production company.
Before they decided not to renew the deal.
Exactly. Yeah. This is it. This movie cost $150 million. We talked about it already. This is the largest budget to be given to a first-time feature film director. We don't need to...
It's
a little redundant. Keep going through it. Opened May 5th, 2006. It made $134 million. That's it.
Cost $150.
And this is domestic.
Right.
Yeah.
Worldwide, the cruise movies always do a little better.
Yeah, they always do better. It ended up making, you know, 263 worldwide, and it made almost $400 million total.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
It's like, this is a similar treatment that we were giving the Edge of Tomorrow review.
Right.
It's the same sort of thing where you're like, well, it didn't, like, tank. It made money. It's just
in the States it tanked, which is, it's so surprising that this movie wouldn't have done well. But I get it because of what was going on at the time.
It's a year after War of the Worlds, man. All that stuff happened in like fall, winter. By the time this movie came out, people just did not want to give Cruise any money. They were just like, I'm just turned off by Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is my favorite of the 4 films.
Yeah.
I do love number 4. And number 4 is widely renowned as the best one. It's
right.
Got like a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Number two is like a joke.
Yeah.
But I watched a lot as a kid.
Hunt.
Hunt. Everyone like is wearing one of those masks at the time. Do we have the visual for the Mission Impossible films here?
Yeah, we do. We have the Mission Impossible gross worldwide and domestic.
So here we go. These are broken down. They're not in any particular order up there. But as you can see, Mission Impossible 3 is behind all of them by a lot.
Yeah.
Like the next closest one is Mission Impossible 1. And you got to think about inflation.
Yeah. That's an 11-year difference. Like, yeah. Making $180 million in 95 is pretty darn good.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. Especially because the budget was nothing compared to this.
And it opened in 1,000 less theaters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was another thing about this movie. This is the fourth largest theater opening of a movie ever.
4,500 theaters or more?
4,055 or 54, okay. And then ended up going up and down a little bit as the weeks went on. But with that big of an opening, and it had one opening weekend.
Yeah.
It actually was still winning second opening weekend, but it dropped. So the first weekend, it made $47 million, right? Which is great. It looks like... I mean, it could be better, obviously.
Yeah, but you're happy with 47.
Yeah, you're happy with $47 million. You do that 3 weeks in a row, you made your money back. But the second weekend, it drops to $25
million. Yeah.
And it's still number one.
Right.
But it drops almost, $20 million in a weekend.
Right.
And then the third weekend, it's $11 million. Just completely doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Da Vinci Code makes $77 million.
Yeah.
And Over the Hedge makes, what, $38 million.
This is kind of exactly what we're talking about with Mad Max. Mad Max made 44, but Pitch Perfect made 76.
Right.
It's like 45 is fine, but if, you just said it made 76, like, yeah. that's like, $30 million difference. This should be the biggest opening movie.
Right. I mean, it opened at $47 million. Da Vinci opened at $77 million in less theaters. Like, that's... People, like you said, no one wanted to see Tom Cruise doing things anymore.
Right.
Even if it had an Academy Award winner in the movie.
Yeah, so it's funny that it's his 10th highest grossing movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have that graphic to throw up there, but his 10 highest grossing films in order are War of the Worlds, Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 4, Mission Impossible 1, Top Gun, Rain Man, The Firm, Jerry Maguire, A Few Good Men, and Mission Impossible 3. The fact that Mission Impossible 3 is the 10th highest grossing film,
right,
but cost $150 million to make, is pretty wild.
And for all those movies made in the 90s and the 80s, you got to take in inflation.
Yeah.
Like the amount of the dollar. That's a massive difference.
It's also, you can just see the effect of the scandal, considering War of the Worlds is number one.
Right. Which,
it's the year
it
before.
It was fine.
It's not as good of a movie.
Not at all.
No.
But
it is entertaining.
It is entertaining, but it made so much more money. It's just, it's ridiculous. So, again, the movie was only in theaters for 2.5 months.
Right.
They pulled it. Avatar was in theaters for 8 months.
Yeah, and this is... You know what I mean? Cruise movies from the 90s, like Jerry Maguire, was in theaters forever.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in theaters for like 6 months or something like that.
People, like, hated this movie. They just didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. So I do want to jump up to Ultimate Action Scene. So let's talk Critical for a minute here.
Okay, so Critical Reception... like I said, this is my favorite movie. It ended up getting... it is certified fresh. It's got a 70% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep.
It is not even close to the 93% for Ghost Protocol.
Okay.
Which, I get it. Ghost Protocol is a very good movie.
And people wanted to like Protocol. That's the difference.
That's true. It had been long enough to where they're like, I want to give Tom Cruise another chance.
Because we have to talk about, like, these reviews on Rotten Tomatoes in a lot of cases from 06 are just... These are critics that walked into the theater expecting to be disappointed, so
right.
Maybe that peppered their experience. It's not like the reviews have changed over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and there was a couple of interesting quotes that I pulled from a few critics because I thought they were just interesting to hear what they had to say. So Roger Ebert, I don't know if you've heard of him.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
Life itself.
He gave it a marginal thumbs down, and he gave it like a 2.5 stars out of 4, saying, and I quote, "Either you want to see mindless action and computer-generated sequences executed with breakneck speed and technical precision, or you do not. I'm getting to the point to where I don't much care."
Sure.
So that's just a weird review to me, because it's like, okay, you don't really appreciate the movie because you're getting old and you don't like good action anymore?
Right.
You can't respect what's going on in this movie? Like, I think that the action is very well choreographed. I think that the scenes are great.
06, I mean, Ebert was getting pretty... He was getting up there. He was getting older.
But the other one that I want to talk about, which is weird because it kind of did resonate with me. Because I remember when this movie came out.
Yeah.
And I watched it in theaters. I think I went, like, within the first couple weekends.
Yeah.
Because I was excited. And then I just kind of forgot about it. And that's what this guy said. His name is Peter von der Haar.
Von der Haar.
Of Film Threat. And he said, "You may be mildly entertained, but damned if you'll remember any of it 5 minutes later."
See, and that's just, it's not true.
It's not true, but at the time it was. Right. That's why the drop-off is so massive every weekend.
People just didn't... Yeah,
I saw it, and they were like, oh, that was pretty good. And then they walked out to the theater, and then, oh, I got a text. And they just forgot. They didn't tell anyone. They don't tell anyone to go see it. They're like, oh, yeah, I saw it. I don't remember a lot about it, but it was...
I guess it is weird, because I guess I remember seeing this movie in theaters. I remember the theater I saw it at. And then it was years before I saw it again. And when I did see it again, I totally had an... This is awesome moment.
Same.
But I was kind of reminded of it. Like, I didn't regard the movie as well.
No.
It was this very vanilla response. I wonder why that was.
I do too, because it's such a good movie. Philip Seymour Hoffman is so memorable in it. And this is, like I said earlier, it's kind of like a reboot feeling.
Well, so, okay, something interesting to talk about here, and we will get to the ultimate action scene, the bridge scene in just a minute here, guys. But one thing I want to bring up is that we're in this day and age now, we talk about this with action movies all the time, because of the nature of our show, where... franchise branding is everything.
Right.
So a studio is way more likely to bankroll a franchise movie, something that has to do with a previous existing franchise or a franchise that existed long ago, like Mad Max, than they are to take a chance on something like Edge of Tomorrow. Right. Some random movie that's just a rando and hope it makes money. You know, hedging on a star's name instead of a franchise name. So you look at like this franchise and you look at the Fast and the Furious franchise. These are two of the most successful franchises out right now.
Yeah.
Fast and the Furious, the fourth movie was kind of the rebranding, and that was in 2008.
Right.
Fast and Furious. They brought the whole original cast back after 2 and 3 had dropped off to like less notable and then not notable actors at all. The fourth movie, they paid them all the money they wanted. I don't think it's a lot of money. Like
a lot of money.
15 to 20 million each for like the stars, I'm pretty sure. Made the movie, made a huge amount of money. Now that's the most successful action franchise out there.
Yes.
Each movie's like the 7 just made $1 billion.
Yeah, it's insane.
This franchise is kind of the same way. They were like, after 2, it was like, okay, you know, we can't just rely on ridiculous stunts.
Even though 2 was pretty damn successful.
Oh, it made a lot of money.
Absolutely.
But I'm saying the rebranding, this was sort of the halfway point. They were like, we'll get Philip Seymour Hoffman, we'll kind of do the same thing.
We'll make it much more believable.
And then 4 was like, okay, this is a really successful franchise. We'll bet the farm on this now, because...
Yeah.
This just always makes money.
Yeah, I mean, they got Jeremy Renner, who was like the top of his game right now.
Yeah,
there,
right.
You know?
You have to think that the fifth movie, it's coming out in July, is going to make a lot of money.
It's going to make a lot of money. Yeah. I'm going to be there.
Absolutely.
It looks insane.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Well, how is he hanging off of a taking off jet plane?
He's probably doing the stunt himself.
He is doing it. No wires, nothing.
Yeah.
I watched that, and I'm like, how the hell does he get down from here?
Yeah.
I can't wait. That's like the main reason I even want to watch the movie, is for that one scene.
There's like some sweet like motorcycle while wearing a Hawaiian shirt stuff.
Yeah, he looks good.
And he's just awesome. He's just the man. So, all right, we want to get into, we talked a little bit about principal photography. We talked about budget, reviews.
Yeah.
Let's get into the ultimate action scene a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay. So this is the bridge scene. And this was supposed to originally be filmed in Virginia. Mm-hmm. There's a great bridge that they wanted to do the thing on, but basically because of... Yeah, I guess we can show the scene
let's,
here.
Let's watch it.
Let's cue it up. This is the one from the trailer that I remember when this movie was out.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the trailer. There's one shot in particular from this that is, like, very, very memorable.
Oh, yeah. It's right here.
Ethan, get out of the car!
Ethan Graham's so sweet.
Oh, he's great.
My man.
The only guy that's been in all the movies other than Ethan.
Yeah, this is such
this
a sweet
it,
song
right here. Yeah. Boom. It's perfect.
And then the jet flies over.
Yeah. And he's kind of shaken up, but not really. He's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, like he's like pretty shaken up.
I mean, that would probably hurt incredibly badly.
Oh, yeah. This is my favorite era of Cruise. This is what I've decided.
This is great.
And that stretch of movies.
That was another thing that was sweet, was that like orange goo they shot on the side to knock it out.
It's awesome.
And the best part about the scene for me is the lead up to it, which has the quote with Philip Seymour Hoffman, where he's like, he's not even scared. He's not even fazed. He's hung out of a plane.
Yeah.
Because he knows that he can't kill him. And Philip also knows he's going to get away.
Yeah.
No big deal, just shooting down a military drone with a G-36.
It's an awesome scene.
And then the jump. Do it.
Slow-mo Cruise, just flailing.
He did this stunt himself, ladies and gentlemen. No wires. It's not true.
There's wires.
There's definitely wires. Not true. I lied.
He does like 70% of his own stunts.
Oh, yeah, always. Which is ironic in this film that he broke a couple ribs from turning too fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not from actually doing anything.
Not from that shot we just saw.
Yeah.
Which you would think shatter his rib cage.
Yeah, exactly.
Break his back in half.
And then this. This is another one of those moments where the guy is getting shot at with a fully automatic gun, kind of like in Rambo
last week.
And
he just doesn't even move.
Doesn't flinch. Doesn't care. Ah, so good.
A little bit, you're like, how are you not hitting him?
I know.
You're like, you're supposed to be like the best shot.
Incredible marksman. Like earlier when the plane or the helicopter's flying by, he's shooting with a handgun.
Yeah.
And you can see it hitting the plane.
Yeah.
It's because Philip sees in there. He's got that bubble.
Yeah.
Force field, if you will.
Of evil.
Of evil.
So, So this was supposed to be filmed in Virginia, but mm-hmm. they decided because the margin for error was too low, they really couldn't film it on a real bridge. Like take a chunk out of a bridge,
right.
anything like that. Even just CGIing the chunk out. Just the amount of weight you'd have to have on the bridge, exploding cars, all that. So they went out to Calabasas, and they actually laid concrete and built
yeah.
a bridge portion of the superstructure.
Mm-hmm.
And they CG'd like the water and a bunch of stuff behind it, and they filmed all of this. That stunt of Cruise running, he's another NDR quote, but he's like saying, I basically knew I had to run full clip. I had to run full clip and rid my mind of the notion that anything was going to happen so that when the explosion did happen,
right, it would just jerk
and yeah. the wires just pull him yeah. towards the car, it would be like totally real.
Absolutely. I mean, this scene, this one moment, not even this scene, this one moment
yeah.
was what was they were using to sell this movie.
They
it was
kept
in all their
showing
trailers.
It.
They showed it on every little clip they had.
Yeah.
And it's what I remember.
Me
from,
too.
From 2006. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, that's the one shot that I remembered.
Yeah.
It's that he gets thrown into the car. And there's there's a video of him and Abrams looking at the dailies.
Right.
And Cruise is like, yes, the concussion of the blast. You could see the concussion of the blast. You know, I mean, not direct quote.
Right.
I was, excuse myself there, but something like that. And it's just awesome. Like, he's so excited about it. It's a great shot.
That's great. His body, like, flies to the side. He hits the car. The window explodes. It's just perfectly choreographed to look so believable.
And then you pull up and the drone flies over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. So that's definitely the one that I remember the best from the selling of the film. But they... the shot took quite a while. Just that one shot, just shooting, that took all day.
Oh, yeah, I can totally imagine that. I mean, that's yeah. you got all the pyrotechnics behind it, which one of the stuntmen ended
yeah.
up suing the production company because during one of the shots, an explosion, something misfired, and he was engulfed in flames. Like, he had, like, burns over 60% of his body. Like,
yeah.
This is real. This is a real thing.
Saw
People
that.
People get hurt doing this. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah, insane. Totally nuts. So, yeah, that kind of covers it for that scene.
Yeah, I mean, like what I really love about that scene is you're leading up to it with this nonchalant, I don't care if you kill me, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
But it's not even I don't care if you kill me, it's you're not gonna kill me,
right.
and I'm gonna get away.
I mean, the whole movie, the thing, it's like so full of these great scenes. There's the scene where he jumps off the roof of the building mm-hmm. and he swings on the rope and then he's sliding down the
he
and he
the
shoots
glass,
the two
he's
guys.
Shooting the guys all
that's awesome.
Falling. It's great.
That's a great one.
And for some reason, it's not too much.
No, that's a great one. You know, you have like this Carrie Russell when the thing in her brain blows up.
Oh
her
my God.
Eye,
the
it's
eye,
super gnarly.
It's great. The makeup on that eye is so real and so believable.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot we don't even really have time to talk about. You know, I love the line where Lawrence Fishburne, like Billy Crudup, says something to him. You know, he's like, I think as operation director, he says something. And I believe Lawrence Fishburne says to him, excuse me, did you just throw a title at me, Mr. Musgrave? I don't care if your daddy plays golf with the president.
Right.
That's the movie's just sweet.
Every single line that Lawrence Fishburne says,
yeah.
he's like, Hunt, and this isn't a direct quote,
yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it is, but he's like, I will bleed on the flag myself to make sure those stripes stay red, or
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that, you know? Like, every line he says is epic.
Or what's he say? He's like, "You." It's unfortunate that you would judge her. He's like, it's unfortunate the chuck that makes you fat, but I've eaten my fair share, something like that.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
So many good lines.
So you get to say your favorite line. I'm going to go into mine, and it's by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay.
It's the, who are you?
Yeah.
What's your name? Do you have a wife? A girlfriend? Because if you do, I'm going to find her. And I'm going to hurt her. I'm going to make her bleed and cry and call out your name. And then I'm going to find you and kill you right in front of her.
Such a good line.
And they use it in all the trailers because he's so badass.
So, okay, we talked about in Edge of Tomorrow, we did this once already, about how there's the difference between the way he delivers the lines in the movie mm-hmm. and the way that he says them in the trailer. Same thing here, not Cruise in this case, but as PSH, in the trailer, it's like, you have a wife, girlfriend, I'm gonna find her, and I'm gonna kill you right in front of her.
Yeah, they cut around it, and they use the audio from different clips, I believe.
Yeah, and it's in the trailer, it's much more dramatic, and in the movie, it's much more believable.
Right.
That's a great method that apparently in Cruise movies, it's like very common. Maybe it's just common in a lot of trailers. Maybe I just notice it more.
It does happen a good amount in trailers. I've noticed that. I'll be waiting to hear the line, like, just the way I want to hear it in the trailer.
Yeah.
And then you don't hear it, and you're kind of, like, disappointed. But in this instance, it's I'm very happy.
Dark Knight's another one, yep.
Yeah.
My favorite line in this movie is where he's realizing that he has to go do this crazy operation where he's going to, like, jump off a bridge, or he's going to jump off the building and swing into whatever. We just talked about it. And Ving Rhames is like, Ethan, I don't have a better plan, or whatever. And he's like,
is that your Ving Rhames voice? Whatever. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I was just... And then he looks at Cruz, looks at him, he's like, God damn it. It's 8:12. We've got 2 hours until they kill my wife. Are you in or not? Like, I just love, it's just, like, so Cruise. It's like, the stakes are high.
Yeah, and it's the everyday man. He's not like, let's go do this. It's like, I need you.
And he trips up on his line. He almost says it's 8:11, and he says it's 8:12. I love stuff like that in movies.
Yeah.
It's a great way for the line to come out. So that's definitely, I think, my favorite line. I also, I do really, really like the excuse me, did you throw a title thing. That's a really good line.
Yeah, my honorable mention line is also from Philip Seymour Hoffman, where he's like, oh, no, it's fine. I always spill red wine on my white custom-made shirt.
Or the other one that Fishburne has is, Mr. Musgrave, please don't interrupt me while I'm asking rhetorical questions.
Yeah, that's a great line. I love that one. I always use that one as my go-to.
Yeah, he's just... Fishburne's really good at this.
He is really good in it.
Yeah.
Billy Crudup, on the other hand, I feel is completely replaceable, but Lawrence Fishburne was great.
I would agree. All right, so let's get to hero rank. Villain, hero and villain. This is an exciting one. I'm going to jump in first.
Yeah? All right, go ahead.
The first thing we have to ask ourselves is there's been four iterations of Ethan Hunt, right? There's been four iterations we've seen in a fifth coming.
Yeah.
This is the best Ethan Hunt. To me, this is the best age.
Yep.
Cruise looks more jacked in this role. It seems like he put size on, or maybe he's like older in the fourth one. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's like the shirt that he's wearing, but he looks jacked. Like, he looks physically more intimidating as the part in this one than he has in the other movies. He's the right age.
His acting chops are incredible.
Very good. Yeah. He's that like questionable 35. You like can't quite tell how old he is, but he looks like he should be about 35 in this movie. I think Ethan Hunt, like, I think the character Ethan Hunt, and if you were going to use this example of him in my mind as the highest ranking, mm-hmm. this is a top 10 action star. This is the top 10 action character.
Okay, so my you know what? No, so I would probably put him in top 15.
Okay.
And it's for all the same reasons that you just gave.
And you go MI3 is the best Ethan Hunt?
Yes, definitely. Like, he's good in MI1, MI2, it's a little ridiculous.
Which is the best Ethan Hunt, guys, by the way? Let us know.
Yeah, please let us know. Which one is your favorite?
Yeah, I would love to know.
Because in Mission Impossible 2, he's, like, way more, like, kind of martial artsy badass.
And he's more like,
yeah, crazy. He's that crazy. Yeah, I think this is the best... This is the best Ethan Hunt, and I'd probably put him in the top 15.
Yeah.
But I counter that with saying that I'd put Philip Seymour Hoffman in the top 5.
All-time action villains.
He is so good. He's so good. And you know what? I'm going to have to go top 10 just because I didn't remember how good he was until I'd seen the movie on TV a little while ago.
The notion that
the
same thing could happen again with somebody else?
Right. It could, but I don't think so. Because first of all, we talked about who this person is and where they're at in their career.
Yeah.
And you go through and you watch the movie, and he's perfect. Like, perfect, perfect. But like I said, you know, there's the Hannibal Lecters of the world. There's these people that...
It's not an action movie, though.
I know. That's why... Yeah. So if we're doing top 5 action movie villains... I mean, excuse me, top action movie villains, I'm going to go... I'll go top 10. And I think that that's also why it makes this version of Ethan Hunt in the top 10 as well. Because the villain is so good.
I'm going to go Ethan Hunt's top 10 and PSH is top 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to say top 5. Just because when I'm thinking of who... What other evil villains in an action movie have even, like, really spoke to me on this kind of level?
Yeah.
There's almost no one that comes to mind.
No, that's true. You know what? I'm changing. I'm going top 5. You're right. I don't know why I second-guess myself.
There's a couple guys, but, like, it's very difficult.
I think the ones I mentioned. Yeah, you got Oldman.
I think we had said top 10 for him.
See, yeah, but that's Air Force One. And Leon the Professional isn't really an action movie.
Right.
Just like Gladiator isn't really an action movie.
Right.
I put Joaquin Phoenix in my top five.
Sure.
So, okay.
All right, so let's get into the recast. It's funny, I saw your list before we were prepping.
You looked at my stuff?
I just glanced at it. We have very similar recasts on this one. It's really odd.
Do we?
Really
strange. I didn't get to see your notes. All right, so let's start with Michelle Monaghan.
Okay, you go ahead.
Me?
Yeah.
Please do. Rachel McAdams.
Okay, yeah.
I love her.
She's great.
She's great. She's a good actress. You see the new True Detective trailers. She can shoot a gun. Like, she's beautiful. And that was the one thing at the end with Michelle Monaghan.
She looks so hot.
She looks so hot. She's all greasy and sweaty and, like, tattered. And you believe, even though this woman has never shot a gun before in her life, probably, you believe that she could kill Billy Crudup. And that other, there is that one moment when she's, like, sitting on the ground. She, like, looks into the reflection off of, like, the paper towel dispenser or whatever it is.
Right.
She sees the guy and turns around and preemptively shoots him. It's a little bit much, but I think Rachel McAdams could pull this off in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, McAdams, she'd be good in this role. I agree.
Have you seen The Notebook?
I would go Evangeline Lilly for this.
Okay. I'm a fan of Evangeline.
Yeah, she's hot. She's like, seems like she's the right age. She's like sweet. I know she's kind of an action tough girl.
Yep.
It's her, for me, it's her. Or the other one that I think I would be more happy to see, but is more of a stretch, is Keira Knightley. Keira Knightley is kind of a little bit of a stretch. What I actually think is we skipped it. We should have recast Kerry Russell as well. We forgot that.
I was going to say we could do an honorable mention to Kerry Russell,
and I would probably split those two, and I would go with Evangeline Lilly is my Michelle Monaghan.
Right.
I would go Keira Knightley as Kerry Russell.
Yeah,
I think that's like the good
which. I have this thing in action movies that I always talk about. It's the you know he's gonna die guy.
Yeah.
You know, in every movie there's that guy. You just see him, you're like, that guy's gonna die.
But yeah, it's a girl in this one.
It's like she's the you know she's gonna die guy.
Kerry Russell.
Yeah, you hear about it in the beginning, you see her, and you didn't see her much in the trailer, you're like, she's gonna die.
Yeah.
And I think if she was in the movie longer, we probably would have recast her.
Probably, yeah.
I'm gonna jump in and do my Ving Rhames.
Okay. It's just too obvious.
This is the one
that I saw. It's. I'll tell you why before we tell you guys who it is. We have the same one.
Yeah.
The reason is this. The actor that we picked is the perfect comedy supporting tough guy.
Yep.
Even though he's a lead now.
I think I think everyone knows it's The Rock.
And the thing is, he's best when he's a supporting character.
I felt like I was... He is so much better as a supporting character. And I felt like I was cheating when I first wrote him down. But I was like, you know what? No.
There's not even anybody who's close.
No, there's no one that's close.
Yeah, if you were in a recast now, he's the perfect, like, the conversation about getting married and all that stuff, he'd just be hilarious. Yeah. He's great at it.
And again, we say this a few times on the show, my favorite thing about your guys' comments is to see the recast and what you guys think of ours. So please, iTunes, YouTube, post your recast. We love to talk about it. And honestly, you guys kind of open up our eyes sometimes. Sometimes yours are better than ours. And, Please do it. I want to see what you have to say.
Yeah, tweet at us about it. I would love to get a tweet about it. I'm going to jump in then with mine, and I'm going to go with my Philip Seymour Hoffman recast. Now, we talked about it over the trailer a little bit. Gandolfini would have been, for me, if he was alive still, the other guy. And they do fill very similar airspace in terms of their sort of ability to be this, like, ugly, evil, but, like, relatable character.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys I can think of that are actually alive now doing work that I like that would sort of feel the same, that would look and feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
So
someone that's not physically intimidating, someone that is very, like,
just,
they have that delivery.
I went with Michael Fassbender because he's super evil.
Really?
Yeah, I saw your list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I think you just didn't do the work and you're just copying my stuff at this point. I did Michael Fassbender as well, and it's because of how good he is as Magneto.
Yeah.
He's so believable and he's so evil.
Yeah.
And he's not a big guy. I mean, Tom Cruise isn't either.
No.
And I guess a fist fight between the two of them would be a little bit more believable.
Yeah.
But I think he'd be perfect.
Fassbender, he would be excellent.
Super intense, badass, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for him, the other guy that came to mind for me was Liev Schreiber.
Oh, yeah, I like Liev Schreiber.
I think he could be good as a villain, but I just...
Fassbender just need to do it. And if you guys are wondering what's going on, we're not recasting Tom Cruise. He's coming out with a new Mission Impossible movie where he's still playing the same character. The dude does not need to be recast.
I don't know who you could even reliably put into a role like this now. If you were going to, like, reboot Cruise, You can't reboot Ethan Hunt.
No.
Like, it's just impossible.
The only person I would have maybe put there would have been Jeremy Renner, but he already rebooted Bourne. Yeah. Can't do it.
Cruise will be, like, in a wheelchair doing this when he's, like, 80.
Oh, absolutely.
He'll be in Mission Impossible 19.
Which is funny that we tried to recast Rambo last week.
Yeah.
But we just didn't even do it with Cruise this week. I don't think it could be done.
No.
It doesn't need to be.
Well, he's still believable.
He's still believable.
The Rambo from 08 was, like, a stretch.
It was definitely a stretch.
So, all right, Cage versus Cruise, obviously Cruise. There's no real,
it's pretty straightforward real reason to on do this it. One.
And the last but not least category, guys, is the which category does this fit into? There are three action movie categories officially. These categories are totally ridiculous, that is fall off a cliff of absurdity, much like Face Off. Totally legitimate, which is the absolute classics that we've ever seen. Great movies that don't really need to be excused, maybe like Die Hard or The Fugitive. And finally, legitimately ridiculous. No.
Perfect.
Ridiculously legitimate.
Yes.
Yeah, ridiculously legitimate. And that's going to be our favorites. It's the middle category, the combination, sort of, you know, The Rock, movies like that are great examples. Right.
Doesn't have to be our favorites, though, because there's some pretty good ones in the other categories.
Yeah,
but
agreed.
I do understand. Those are the pinnacle action movies.
Just the ones that have just enough camp and just enough quality. This is totally legitimate.
I agree.
Totally legit.
Totally legitimate.
It's right on the edge for
me. There is. There's like moments where you're like, I don't know, but it's just good enough. It's just believable enough throughout the whole thing.
And it's because of PSH.
It is.
Yeah.
It's 100% because of PSH.
He's just the best part of the movie.
Yeah, totally. I mean, even when it's him playing Ethan Hunt as him, like in the bathroom and the coughing and like he's just so good.
He's just excellent.
Everything about this is believable. He's intimidating. He's threatening. Like, this dude is scary.
God
and
rest
he
his
shouldn't
soul.
Be. Just look at him. God rest his soul.
Such talent. Such a talent. Gone too soon.
Super bummed about that.
Yeah, it made me sad watching this movie.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap it up, guys. That is Action Movie Anatomy week 7 or something.
6.
Or
come on.
6.
You even care about me?
Week 6. We love Mission Impossible 3. We're going to do Mission Impossible 5 the week it comes out.
Yeah.
That'll be coming right up in July. Be sure to come in and check out next week. We're going to be doing Fast and the Furious 7, Fast 7 as they call it. We'll have an awesome guest who worked on that film as well. Going to be in studio doing that with us. So check back with us. If you want to find me or Andrew in the meantime, tweet at us. My name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter, Instagram, and very occasionally Periscope.
Yeah, I am so excited about the episodes that are coming up. You have no idea.
We have a really good slate.
Good things coming, guys. At Andrew Guy on Twitter. That's G-H-A-I. Thank you for watching me again.
Yeah, 100%. We'll see you guys soon.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.